Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining the conference call today with regard to Ping An's 2018 first quarter results announcement and presentation. My name's James Garner. I'm Group Chief Strategist and Head of IR, and I'm going to host the call today. With me is Mr. Jason Yao, CFO and Chief Actuary, and Mr. Richard Sheng, the Board Secretary and Brand Director. This conference call will be conducted in English and will last for around 30 minutes. To allow more questions, please ask no more than one question at a time. Please also state your name and the name of your company before asking your question. Just before we give this call, I want to make a further statement. Today, during the board meeting, some people spread malicious rumours about changes of the party secretary and the chairman of Ping An Group in the social media. These rumours are baseless, malicious, and complete nonsense. The whole board condemns such activities. This rumour has damaged the stability of the capital market and our brand. We've already reported this case to the security authorities, and we will try and punish the persons that were responsible for spreading this baseless rumour. Without further ado, we're ready to take the first question, operator.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We will now move on to the Q&A session. If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press star and the one on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. Thank you. Now, the first question comes from JP Morgan, Kane.
Thank you, management, for taking my question. This is MW Kim from JP Morgan. I have one question about your new business growth outlook. So first quarter, the number was relatively weak compared to last couple of quarters in terms of growth rate. So how we should think about your overall the growth outlook for the last 9 months? And also, it seems that compared to the December, your total sales, the sales headcount seems a bit declined. So can you please give more the update how you should become more the productive in terms of a sales agent productivity and the headcount outlook? Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Kim. Yeah, I think our first quarter FYP growth was around a negative 16%, but our new business value growth was negative minus 7.5%. It is a little bit weak compared to our previous years, and we feel the pressure. But I think from this one, we still see some lights on it, right? The positive ones, we still take it from this. The first one, the margin has been relatively improved. The margin has been improved to 3 percentage points to over 30%. So overall, the product mix itself in the first quarter is better than last year. Then I think the outlook trend for the next 9 months is we should feel relatively confident that quarter by quarter the situation should improve, and we should be able to catch up the gap, you know, the negative gap we had in the first quarter. So for the whole year, we still quite confident to achieve positive growth, and we will strive to even achieve a high growth, a positive growth for the whole year. So I think every quarter, over the quarters, I think the situation will be getting better and better. Then in terms of a number of agents, the number of agents, if you compare to the same period last year, still increased over 13%. Of course, compared to the end of last year, it is a minus drop. Because due to the premium growth pressure in the first quarter, a lot of branches that they are busy trying to produce premiums, then a little bit less effort on growing the number of agents. But I think start from the second and third quarter, I think the effort will still come back to grow number of agents. But of course, the growth will not be as high as last year when it's over 25%. So we are thinking around a low 10% growth, low teens is the long-term sustainable growth rate. At the same time, we will continue to improve our agent productivity and improve the our monthly income for those agents. So we still, our strategy has been fairly stable on the agency side. Still a solid growth in number of agents. At the same time, try to improve the productivity and maintain a relatively stable margin of the product mix. And even this year, we see there is some room to even to improve the margin. Yeah, improve the margin as well. James, you want
to? Yeah, that's very clear.
I just
want to add a couple of points to what Yaozong was saying. Firstly, just to make it clear, from the 1st of June last year, we adopted document 134. So we were very early adopters of it. Many other peers didn't adopt it until the deadline. The second point, regarding the agent growth, we're very cognizant of increasing agents, but also maintaining a very high agent activity ratio. And actually, one of the highlights in the first quarter was that our agent activity ratio was over 66%.
The next question comes from Scott, Macquarie Securities.
Yeah, good evening. It's Scott Russell at Macquarie. Can I ask three hopefully quick questions, please, mostly relating to earnings and one-offs? The P&L's obviously got a lot of volatility in the first quarter. Just on the IFRS 9 changes in insurance, is that $4.8 billion impact, is that just an implementation impact, or is that a function of volatility? I'm trying to understand whether that, if you had exactly the same quarter in the second quarter, third quarter, whether that's recurrent. Second question is related to that OPAT in the life company. Obviously, a much better way to look at your profits in the life company. Up 12.8% year on year. That looks a little lighter than what we've expected in the last 12 months, which is over 30%. Can you comment on perhaps any unusual movements in that relating to the RM release or perhaps weaker experience? And then the final question is just about FinTech. Obviously, a big contributor to the profits, $1.8 billion. Are there any restructuring gains or any unusual non-recurring items in that 1Q, or should we just multiply that by four if we're forecasting 2018 profits? Thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you, Scott. Yeah, three fairly straightforward questions. The first one regarding the P&L impact from IFRS 9, this 4.9 billion impact on the life business. It is not a implementation effect. It's not going to recur. It is not a one time. It's just a consequence of the new accounting standard. When the market is volatile, it will create some volatility. Then this 4.8 billion, basically there are two sources of this. The first one is, for example, under the old accounting treatment, so if we bought a stock 2 or 3 years ago and the stock price increased quite significantly in 2017, right? For example, one stock, for example, is Country Garden. Then we accumulate a lot of unrealized gains. Then in the first quarter, if we sold that stock a little bit, or to some extent, a portion of the stock, then under the old county treatment, you will have a profit, which will also go into your P&L, right? Because that's your capital gain. Originally, it's in your balance sheet. Now, if you sold this, originally, that stock is treated as AFS, but if you sold a portion of that, if you have a gain or loss, that gain or loss will go to the P&L. But under the new requirement, if you sold that, you won't be able to book a profit unless the price you sell is higher than the price as of December 31st, 2017. And you only recorded the difference between that those two numbers, not your original cost. Okay, so that's the big difference. I'm not sure whether you get it. Is that all clear?
It's complex, but I follow. Thanks, Jason.
It's complex. Yeah, this is one thing, right? Because under the new accounting treatment, as of 2017, December 31st, you have a lot of capital gains, right? But they are recorded in other comprehensive income. When you implement that, those comprehensive income, they will go to your retained earning. That portion will go to your retained earning, even though your net assets stay the same and there's no impact because those stocks are already marked to market, right? But then when you how they go to your P&L, that stock's cost under the new accounting statement is become the market value as of 2017, end of 2017, not your original cost. Okay, this is one thing. And the second thing is, you know, originally you have a lot of stocks under the old accounting rules are AFS. When they have market movement and realized gain or loss, those volatility will go to your balance sheet. But under the new accounting statement, most of the stocks will be classified as fair value through P&L. So if you have volatility in the stock market in the first quarter, then you know those unrealized gains in particular will hit our earnings. So those are the two major source of the uncertainty. But of course, if the stock market increased significantly, then we can also have a very positive swing on the P&L. Yeah. So that's why under the new accounting statement, it does create a more volatility, especially regarding the equity side. That's why we introduced the operating profits concept last year. Yeah. Okay. Then I'm going to answer your second question. That is the life operating profits. Yeah, life operating profits increased. The group's profit operating profits increased around 17.7%. Life side is around 13%. Yeah, slightly low compared to our previous couple of years. I think the reason is the number is still solid. But I think due to the negative growth in your first year premium in 2018, then it will drag down your amortization of your residual margin because you have less residual margin created compared to previous years, and you have less residual margin, then the amortization will slow down a little bit. As I said, for the forecast of new business value and the forecast of this operating profits, I think in the second quarter, third quarter, when our new business growth resumes, become better, then the operating profits growth will also become better. Yeah. So basically, I think the growth on new business value and the growth on operating profits in the first quarter, to some extent, should be the low point for the whole year.
Okay.
And the third one, the fintech. Yeah, fintech has a positive contribution of about 1.8 billion. Most of them, all of them, this number is all operating profits. Yeah, there is no one-time gains. It is all operating profits. The main contributor are mainly Lufax, then Auto Home, and also from our e-wallet. Yeah.
Okay, thanks very much, too.
The next question comes from Charles Sloan Robinson.
Thank you. I my question's already been answered. It was the same as Scott's. I'll go back and thank you.
Those are popular questions.
Okay.
Any more questions, operator?
Now the next question comes from Deutsche Bank, Esther.
Yes, hello. I have a follow-up question on the impact, the investment income adjustments that you have, the $4.9 billion. So, Jason, earlier you explained that the first impact could be because from the stocks that that with higher costs now, given the cost now it's as of December of last year instead of when you bought the investment, for example. So would that, in that case, would that result in a negative adjustment? So what I'm trying to figure out is what's in the investment income adjustment. So in that case, for example, if you bought the stock at $100 but it was subsequently adjusted to $150 as of the end of 2017, and now it went to perhaps you sold it. So would the 50 that you would otherwise book as gains be booked as a negative 50 under this investment income adjustments? And a follow-up questions on that. So there, because of this change, there are a lot of questions. But then should we then be just looking at the comprehensive income? So I guess my question is, would IFRS 9 affect the comprehensive income? Thank you.
Yes. Simple example. Yeah. You just, for example, right? 1 year ago, at the beginning of 2017, right, we bought a stock for 100. Right. Then at the end of 2017, that stock goes up to 250, as you said, right? So we had a lot of unrealized gains. We haven't sold the stock, right? So under the old accounting treatment, during 2018 first quarter, I sold that stock for 200, right? For 200. Then I'm going to book a 100 profit, right? 100 profit. Because the cost originally is 100, then now I sold it at 200, so the gain is 100. Okay, then under the new ones, yeah, you record a minus 50.
Okay.
So, yeah, under the new one, you minus 50. But of course, the balance sheet itself, the net asset doesn't. It's the same. But the profit do have this big difference.
Yeah. So in other words, we may just have that this 1 year of this type of adjustment, and then going forward, it should all be normal again, right? We won't have this.
No. This situation may happen again. Because, you know, I have other stocks which I haven't sold.
Oh, okay. So in other words,
the old one, I can still book profits, but under the new one, you know, you won't be able to book such a big profit, right? So to say, under the new one, all your unrealized gains has been sunk into your retained earning. Then your cost is the market value as of 2017, end of 2017.
Yeah, Esther, I mean, one of the reasons that we introduced the operating profit metric is that the net income under the new accounting is going to have a lot of volatility. So that's the reason why we introduced the operating profit metric, which, you know, removes some of that volatility and gives a picture of sort of underlying earnings move.
Yeah, basically for equities, you have two classifications. One is called, a fair value through P&L. Then you also have some other equities, you can classify them as fair value through OCI, right? For example, we do have a few stocks which we classify as OCI. For example, if we bought ICBC, the stock we bought on ICBC, they pay 5-6% dividend, and we intend to hold them long term. Okay, so those ones, if they have market value movement, those movements will not go to your P&L, but it will go to your balance sheet. It will affect your OCI. You're still going to have some OCI. but the dividends you receive is going to go through your P&L, right? Goes through your P&L. But the other side of this, the coin, is when you want to sell this stock. For example, if I want to sell ICBC, for example, a portion of that, which my cost is 4 Hong Kong dollars. Now it's become 10 Hong Kong dollars. Then you sold it. If you classify it under the new one, the OCI, even you sold it, the profit, the gains will not go to P&L. Yeah. But of course, on the balance side, balance sheet side, the net assets has already been reflected. But yeah.
So just to make sure I understand this. So in other words, if we just look at the comprehensive income, it would have taken off all these noises, right?
Yes. The comprehensive income, which we said that the total investment yields include other comprehensive income, and both the old one and the new one, they are the same.
Okay.
They are the same. Yeah, this all marked market, they are the same. Yeah. Total investment income, investment yield include other comprehensive income, they are the same.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
We've got time for one last question, operator.
Now, the next question comes from Charles Sloan Robinson.
Hi, me again, Charles Carthage, Sloan Robinson. So could you comment on the investment yield, the annualized total investment yield and the net investment yield, both 3.7%? Just to be clear, so does this number also reflect reduced equity values? And further, if I may, since people seem to have asked more than one question, could you comment on the weak operating profit at PNC in spite of a stable COR and quite strong growth in premium? Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, thanks, Charles. The first one is on the total investment yield, and net investment yield is about 3.7%. Yeah, it's a bit weak. It is a bit weak. For net investment yield, usually in the first quarter, the net NII will be slightly lower compared for the whole year, because usually in the first quarter we have not booked those dividends which you can get from your stocks and your mutual funds. Usually usually stocks and dividends they pay dividends in the second quarter, right? So the dividends are booked into the NII. So usually the first quarter NII is relatively low, but then the whole year will improve. Then TII, total investment yield, is also 3.7. That means there's no contribution at all from the capital gain. Overall, the market is relatively volatile and weak, right? Especially in February and in March. So that's the situation. Hopefully, when those stocks like the ICBC, whatever we bought, we can collect dividends, then the NII will go up in the second quarter and the third quarter. Then regarding the PNC net profit number, the total premium increased around 17%. CO1 remained stable. So the underwriting profits for PNC business actually increased. Why you see a negative, small negative decrease in the net profit? This is mainly due to the cost. The ambulance? this is mainly due to the tax, because the PNC business, the commission they paid to certain business that exceed the tax deductible percentage, then you have to pay additional tax. So that's why they affect your net profit. Okay,
thank you very much.
Thanks.
So thank you for all of your questions. This concludes today's telephone conference call. I'd like to thank you all once again for joining us today. Thank you very much.
Okay.